Mario Lopez Kirker. My name is Mario Lopez Kirker. I'm age 94 years old. Today date, March the 10th at 2020. Location in Las Cruces. Name of the interview partner, Mr. Miller. Relationship as a friend.
My name is David Morrison. I'm 61 years old. Today's date is March the 10th, 2020. And I am the interviewer for Mario and Randy. And they are both my friends, World War II veterans.
I'm Jacob R. Miller. I'm 98 years old. And
Today's date
is March the 10th, 2020.
And the location?
And
we're in Las Cruces.
We're in Las Cruces.
And who is your interview partners? Who are you here with?
Well, my interview partner is Mario Kirker.
Yes. All right. So I'm here with my two friends, Mario Kirker and Randy Jacob Miller, and they're both World War II veterans, and I wanted to present their stories, for them to present their stories to their families and to these archives. So we will begin with a little bit of introduction about World War II. Briefly, there were, Mario and Randy and I had the opportunity to go to the honor flight back in October of last year, and it honored our World War II veterans. It's a Southwest New Mexico honor flight, and it honors the World War II and the Korean War vets that served our country, and it takes them to the Capitol and the monuments that are in Washington, D.C., and it's a marvelous way to give show them respect and honor and for them to make closure for the service that they did. And I had the privilege of being able to be their guardians along with 30 others who went. And in relation to New Mexico played a big part of volunteer. As a matter of fact, New Mexico had more volunteers in World War II than any other state, and more died in World War II than any other state. There were approximately 261,000 that died in World War II. There were 104 World War II veterans that were from Grant County, where we're from, who didn't make it back. Out of those 104, 58 of them were Bataan Death March veterans. 47 of those Bataan veterans returned, but 58 didn't. So today, there are very few World War II veterans still living. And there are, however, still 25 or 26 in Grant County. I am friends with four or five of them. Here are two of my best friends, and I wanted to honor them and give them opportunity to tell their stories so that they can share with their families and so that we can have an archive to share these things that they know in person. So to begin with, we'll kind of do a timeline from their entrance into the service until their experience overseas and then what they did when they came back. I'll ask about 8 or 10 questions, the first of which I will address to Mario. So, Mario, tell us about how you entered the service. Were you drafted or did you volunteer? And what was it? What happened when you entered the service? When you went to basic training, tell us about it.
Okay, I was 17 years old, and I was taken of a family of seven, and I was working in a lumber yard for $14 a week. And I just couldn't make it. I was lifting cement and working pretty hard. So I decided to join the Navy when I was 17. And I asked my mother, I said, Mother, I want to go into the Navy. And she says, no, you are taking care of the family. And my father was very sick. He couldn't work anymore. So he says, if my son wants to go and fight for his country, I will sign for him tomorrow. I'm very proud of my father. His name was Juan Kirker. And he, the following days, we went to the recruiter. He signed his name down. And I was sent to Santa Fe for an examination. They finished the examination, and the two doctors were talking to each other, and I figured that they were talking about me. And I confronted the doctor, the two doctors, and asked him, I know that you're talking about me. I say, what's wrong? He say, you're lacking 1 pound. I said, let me tell you something. Nobody's going to deprive me of fighting for my country for just 1 pound. And the doctor makes a motion, you're in.
That's a great story.
I was sent to Fergus, Idaho for my training. And after I got out of training, I was sent to Maryland for training as a landing craft ship, LST. So we trained for about 2 months with the Coast Guard, and then we were ready, and they sent us to Evansville, Indiana, to pick a brand new ship, the LST-123. That's it?
That's good. I'm going to ask Randy how he had joined the service.
Okay.
So we're going to kind of go back and forth a little bit
along
this road that we're going to travel. Mm-hmm. Okay, Randy, would you tell us how it was with you when you joined the service?
Well, I was working for Mack Truck Company in the metallurgical lab when the war broke out, and I didn't volunteer. I'll just wait when my time comes. And the chief metallurgist said, well, I can get you a deferment for 6 months. But I said, no, when the time comes, I'll take my turn. And so that's how I went into the service. I was drafted, and I went to Fort Knox, Kentucky. And there I went to radio school, became a radio operator. And from there, I went to Fort Campbell. It was Camp Campbell at the time. And I was a radio operator in a Sherman tank, which I didn't care for at all. I guess I had a little
claustrophobia.
Anyhow, the first lieutenant took pity on me and field artillery there. And he gave me a job as a wire corporal, and that's where I got my first two stripes. And then, should I go on?
Other next bit of training you went to after
I was there most of the summer and part of the fall, and a notice came up on the bulletin board in headquarters, and it said the Air Force needed pilots and bombardiers and so on. So I went to Nashville, and I took the test and passed it, talked to the lieutenant colonels there, and they okayed me. And so I was in as an aviation cadet. Uh-huh. And I went from there to Freeman Field, Indiana, on a night shift, killing time until there was an opening at a college. And finally, there was an opening that winter, and I went to the University of Pittsburgh, and I was going through the training there, it came Easter Sunday, and they called us out to the parade grounds, and they said the government has decided they don't need any more pilots. So anyone that came here from a different branch of the service will be dismissed, will be out. And so they took 200 of us and sent us to Camp Ellis, Illinois, a mud hole camp, a new camp. And we grabbed a wheelbarrow and was graveling pathways. And you never saw 200 more guys that were disgusted coming from the University of Pittsburgh to a mud hole in Illinois. And that's where we formed our 63rd Field Hospital.
63rd Field Hospital.
And that's right. I went overseas in the 63rd.
Okay, Randy. Thank you. And now back to Mario. Mario, you mentioned your LST. That's what's on your hat. U.S. Navy LST 123. What does LST stand for?
Landing Craft Ship.
Okay, so what that means was how many people were on your ship, and tell us about you. As I understand it, you spent your whole time on the service on this ship, 2+ years. Tell us about that experience and about that.
Okay, there were 105 crew, and I was on the LST 123. I was working on as a diesel mechanic, and I think that's about it. Of course.
Well, you were a gunner too, right?
I was. Yeah. Okay. My duty was to take care of the power on the ship for 2 years, and I was a first gunner aboard the ship on the bow to fire at the first enemies, the first one to fire at the enemies. So we knocked 2 planes down, and the last one was the most horrible thing you could ever see. A torpedo was dropped at our ship, and the plane was way low, so they asked us to fire, and then cease fire, and then again open fire, and the plane went down.
So that was what's called a torpedo, kamikaze torpedoist, huh? Yeah.
Well, I guess it must have been. It dropped a torpedo quite pretty far away. Uh-huh. But it was a Navy, Japanese Navy plane. It dropped a torpedo at our ship. The torpedo, we had a chance to fire 2 times. And there, right close to us, was another small ship. And he asked to advance. And when he advanced, he got in line of the torpedo and cut it in half, cut the other ship in half, and saved our ship that we carried 150 Marines with us.
Was this at Guadalcanal or was it at Guam?
It was before getting to Guam. Mm-hmm. It was before the invasion of Guam. And the torpedo was cut the ship in half, and we were safe. And then,
so what other missions did your outfit? You had, I understand, you had three mission stars for your ship.
Yes, there was. I got 3 stars. It was Guam, and 2 of the Philippines, Leyte and Luzon. And then a citation for the ship for 2 stars more for the ship. So there was 5 stars altogether.
So tell me, what else did you do on ship besides your diesel mechanic work and keeping the ship running?
Well, I was the only barber aboard ship, so I used to cut the hair to everybody who wants to get a haircut. That's what I used to do. I used to cut the hair of the captain and the executive officer and some of the officers and a few of the enlisted men.
So when you landed, when you were on that battle where you shot that plane down, right, you also wanted to sneak off and go on land. Did for some reason. What can you tell me? Tell me about that. Yeah, when you wanted to sneak off the ship and go on land. Tell us about that story.
Okay, so when we went in to Guam, we started unloading. We were the first ones to go in on the first wave. And then we started unloading, and we couldn't finish. So we went back the following day, and we went in, and they told us that we could get off the ship and walk for a small place, but don't go in too far because it was very dangerous. So I got off, and I decided to go and look for a Japanese wash. When I got close to the shore, I noticed rifles on the beach from east to west. As far as you could see, there were rifles all over the beach, and I believe that each rifle belongs to a Marine. So I wanted to get a small rifle. I picked it up, and it looked like brand new, you know. It looked real nice. As I turn it around, it had a bullet hole right in the chamber. And I drop it back, and I don't want that rifle. So I drop it back. I start walking south, and there were two tanks. One of them had a big round hole on it. And as I got close, I noticed a lot of humans were left. Nothing was left but just little pieces of human being. And then there was another tank right close to it, and there was a Marine standing on it, and he jumped from the tank and started running where I was coming. And he was my friend that I got to know aboard ship. I used to make the ice cream I invited for some ice cream, so... And then he came over and hugged me and said, he started crying, and then he gave me the bad news. He said, Kirker, out of 150, they killed my friends. 105 were killed, and we were only 45 left. So I knew a lot of the Marines. I used to cut their hair. And I cried too. I cried with him. I cried at both of them. I cried. He said, Kirker, go back. It's too dangerous here. Go back and go back to the ship. So as I went back, I didn't see him anymore. His name was Maganios, and he got to be a very good friend of mine. He was a sergeant, and of course, there's. I'll finish the end.
Thank you, Mario. So, Randy, you were the 63rd Field Hospital, trained as a medic, yeah. And you went across the Atlantic Ocean on a ship. Oh. And then when you got to Scotland, you did something. So tell us about that voyage across the ocean and then what you did before you crossed the English Channel into France.
Well, I was fairly late in getting into the war, really. Our outfit boarded a ship in the Boston Harbor, and we took off on Armistice Day, 1944, 7 days across the Atlantic on the New Amsterdam. It was a Dutch liner. It was manned by the English, and we had mutton stew all the way across the Atlantic. I never wanted mutton stew again. We landed in Scotland, and there was 7,000 on that ship. It was one of the biggest liners at the time. And so we spent most of the winter in Scotland getting our equipment together and getting things. And while we were there, I was a medical technician, but I had nothing to do, so I volunteered as a truck driver. And so me and a friend of mine were truck drivers, and we moved all our equipment from Glasgow, Scotland, to Liverpool, England. And Because when we got to Liverpool, the Germans were still sending buzz bombs over Liverpool.
What's a buzz bomb?
Well, I don't know how to explain it, but it was like a missile with an engine, a motor on it, uh-huh. and the Germans were sending those over Liverpool and other parts of England, and.
You know, when I got back to the ship, when the war was over.
Oh, okay. That's
okay. When you'd hear these buzz bombs, it was like a buzz. Uh-huh. When the buzz quit, you didn't know where that thing was going to land. Uh-huh. And then you'd hear an explosion somewhere. But anyhow, we got through that, and we got our equipment on a ship and at the English Channel, and we took off in the dark, and we were going across the channel, and all of a sudden, the ship started jumping up and down, and we thought, uh-oh, we hit a mine. But then the captain came on and said, don't be alarmed. We thought we saw something in the channel, and we put it in direct reverse. So we landed in France. That was already free. And from there, we were there about a month, and then we went from there into Holland and then on into Germany, mm-hmm. and that's where our outfit finally went into service.
And so, did you follow the infantry and the field army, and you were like a backup? What's called a MASH?
Yeah,
that means.
If you ever watched the MASH unit on TV, our outfit was similar, and we followed the front. 1,500 yards is as close as we got. Mm-hmm. That was close enough. We could hear the artillery. But it was our job then to take care of the wounded. And at that time, I think it was already March, there wasn't a lot of casualties by that time, really. Mm-hmm. It was getting pretty close to the end of the war. But we did have a few. I remember... One thing that stuck in my mind, still sticks in my mind, we would set up in tents if there were no buildings. If there were buildings, we'd take them over and set up our hospital. And this one place we stopped, and there was a little outbuilding outside. And I was curious, and I opened the door to see what was in this outbuilding. And it was a pile of human bodies. Oh, I never did know whether it was Germans or whether it was our mm-hmm. our soldiers, but that always stuck in my mind.
Thank you, Randy. So, Mario.
Yeah.
What would be some of your most, what things do you remember about your part on the ship besides your work? Was there any other stories that you would like to share with your family? Any other funny story or a good friend that you had, your best friend? Or tell us a little bit about being on the ship for 2 years and the friendships that you made and what you would like to share with maybe your family members from that experience.
Well, actually the crew had different places to work on. And I belonged to the diesel mechanics. They were called the Black Gang.
Why is that?
The Black Gang, that's what they called the diesel mechanics.
Oh.
So I got to know all of them real well, and they were very good to me. They treated me real nice, and we were just like a big family, you know. Everybody had their own crew, and they know each other real well. I got to know all my friends that were diesel mechanics, and we were always together, you know. So they treat me real nice and everything. I can't say anything bad about them. They're wonderful people. I got together with them after the war, and we talk about everything, and. We were like a big family, a different feeling on the men that we went to war with. It was like a brother, or maybe it was maybe a little different than a brother, but we were very close together. And when we got together in Washington, D.C., we went everywhere, and everybody had a wonderful time. And we talk about how young, when we saw each other, we didn't recognize anybody. It was, we all are old, and it was hard to get back again, but we came together, and we were very happy with him. I still have one of the relatives call me up at least once a month or twice a month and talk to me, and so we got to be a real good friend.
So your ship, the LST-123, you were on for over 2 years, and it was a troop. It was the main mission was to get the Marines on land, right?
Right with them.
And you were part of a convoy of about 10 or 11 other ships, right, that you traveled?
Yeah, there were always about 10 ships or 11. I don't know, remember exactly. We were always together, the same group, were the fifth. Mm-hmm. And we were together all over the world all the time. We were up there overseas.
So you left as a crew on the LST-123 when it was commissioned, and you came back on that ship over 2 years later on the same ship. Is that
yeah,
right?
Yeah. I was coming out of the Philippines when we were on the last engagement at Leyte. We were in the middle of the ocean, and the LSTs were stopped, and then there were other LSTs, brand new, going across. And the executive officer was to get command of a brand new ship. And since he knew me real well, he called me up. He used to call me by my first name, Mario. I want you to go with me. I'm going to be the captain, a new captain of a brand new ship, and you were the most experienced, and I want you to go with me. I said, well, I'd like to go with you. I'm not afraid of anything, but I've been told that maybe I might be going home, and I'd rather go home and get married and raise a family. And besides, when I needed my stripes, the officer that was in charge of the Black Gang, we passed the equator. We had to initiate everybody. I was a barber. I had to initiate it. But I couldn't give him a haircut. I got to cut a little bit of hair. He got a haircut. And so that's the only thing. The captain was standing right next to me. He said, cut his hair. So the captain gave an order. I got close to him. I pick up a little bit of the hair and you touch me, and you will never get promoted. Sure enough, I'd done everything I was told, but I never got promoted. I was the only one that was not promoted.
Oh, wow. So when you came back to, was it San Francisco and then Washington for a little while before you?
Yes, we coming back. When we got going to, we were told that our ship would go to Honolulu, Pearl Harbor, to get repairs. So that's when the officer told me about to go with him. I say, well, I came with this ship. I want to go back with it. As soon as we got in Pearl Harbor, I was told, Mario, you're going home. Get your seat back and everything. Get ready, and you're gonna get off the ship. I got my seat back. I put everything on the deck, and then the orders came. Kirker, we're gonna go to the LST-123 is going to San Francisco. I say this has been my home for over 2 years. I'm gonna go with it. And I came to San Francisco. From there, I went home. I got married and everything. And then they told me to go to Maryland, to Seattle. So I went to Seattle, and then the war was over. They sent me back to San Pedro to be discharged. And, well, you want that more?
No, that's good. So, Randy, so when you were in Germany and the war was over, what did you then also do in Germany after the war was over?
Well, our field hospital opened up a refuge center, and there was a plane there, and we examined people. Most of them were Polish people that had been in Germany, had worked as prisoners, mm-hmm. and we got them on their way back to Poland from that little air base. And
did you drive truck and carry people?
Yes, I drove truck there too. I would make runs to the well and get drinking water for the hospital, and
you even got to go skiing. Tell us about that.
Oh yeah, I got a 7-day leave to Switzerland, and I got to go up Mont Blanc and go skiing in January 1946.
Wow.
and then the 1st of February, I had enough points to come home.
So you left. It took like 7 days on the trip to across. How long did it take coming back on the ship?
Coming back.
Yeah.
We got on a small Victory ship in the north of Germany, in the North Sea, and it was in the end of January and February, and the seas were very rough, and that was the roughest ride I ever had in my life, and it was so rough, we went all the way down to the Azores, and then across to Bermuda, and then up to New York, 17 days to get back.
Oh, my goodness. And the waves were, like, swelling, and everybody was getting seasick?
Oh, yeah, everybody was getting seasick. I didn't bother me at all. I was lucky. But,
So, two more things we'll ask. When you got back, Mario, what did you want to do? You got married, right? You raised a family, and what kind of job did you start doing?
Well, when I got back, there was a lot of people unemployed that weren't back. They came back for the jobs, and I went to the local mine, Chino Mine Company in Hurley and Santa Rita, and they gave me a job right away, a laborer. And then I started working there, and I said, well, what am I doing here as a laborer? I'm a diesel mechanic. And there was a big sign, diesel mechanics are needed, apply. So I said to myself, well, I'm going to go and apply for the job as a diesel mechanic. And I went in to the office, and the man that was there, I asked him if I could fill out an application. And he gave me, as soon as he saw me, he said, we don't have any openings. I said, well, I just got vet from the war. I fought in three major battles. We were attacked 5 times. And then he gave me the good answer. And then he said, tough, bang, bang, that you had to go and fight. We don't know your bang, bang thing. I felt like crying because I saw my friends, young kids, young men like myself. A lot of were left behind. They died, and they were being buried. I saw where they were being buried. I saw where they were doing. Truckloads of dead Marines were coming in. I saw all that. And I saw another thing. When we went in, I didn't see any American planes drop a bomb on the beach. There were thousands or hundreds of Marines that were killed. I say, why didn't they drop bombs on the? And that was it. So I felt pretty bad. I quit the job there, and I went and got another job as a blacksmith. I learned how to be a blacksmith.
And we have to kind of wrap it up here, Mario. So after that, you went on ahead and did, you were a counselor for the school. You were a...
I got a job. I was a police officer for 35 years. They needed another truant officer at the Cobra School. And I applied for it, and they gave me the job, but Cobra didn't have enough funds to furnish a car. So, and then the city of Bear had a police car sitting out in the front of the city hall. They didn't have enough money to hire a full-time police officer. So the superintendent of the school went and talked to the mayor. I said, we're in a tight spot. We got a police officer and a truant officer, and we don't have anybody, no money to buy a car. Or say, you have a police car here. We have a officer that has a lot of experience of police. Why don't you hire him? He said, well, we can't afford to pay him the full salary. He said, well, make a deal. I said, well, the mayor came out and said, we'll pay him $200. And then we furnished the police car, too. So he'll be a police car and a truant officer.
And, Randy, what did you do when you came back? I know you ended up working with the Atomic Commission.
When I came back, I went to my old job in New Jersey, and I worked there for 2.5 years. And then I had married by that time, and my wife wanted to move back to Iowa, where she came from. And so we moved back there in December 1948, and there was an ordnance plant there, and they were manufacturing atomic bombs. And so I got a job on the line as an inspector with the contractor, and I worked a couple years for the contractor, and then I transferred over to AEC, and I was an AEC inspector to see that the atomic bomb was put together properly, all the parts, the necessary parts were there. And I put my big star stamp on the nose of the bomb when it was all complete. Well, and I said that bomb was ready to drop. And that was. And I worked there until 1974. In October, they closed the line and they moved it. Consolidated with the one in Texas at Pantex, and I chose not to go there. I took involuntary retirement, and I retired in October 1974 after 25 years on that line.
Wow, so...
And so I've been retired for 45 years.
Wow. So about the atomic bomb and so forth, we know that it was tested here, and Mario, when Mario and Randy met when we went to the honor flight, they had a little discussion. And they talked about that, and Mario said, what did you say about what did New Mexico do?
I say, Mr. Miller, I say, you had something to do with the atomic bomb. I am so proud to know you. I said, you know what, where did they drop the, where did the bomb was made? He said, it was made in New Mexico. I say, where did they drop the bomb first? They drop it in White Sand. I'm saying the third time, where did they drop the bomb? They drop it in Japan, in two places. I said, therefore, Mr. Miller, I think New Mexico won the war.
Well, it's been a pleasure being able to have an interview for Randy and for Mario, and to learn about their stories. And I hope that it'll be a blessing to anybody that listens and to their family. And thank you both for your service to our country and that your contribution to our civilian life as well. And also, if you want to know more about the New Mexico veterans in Grant County, Mary Alice Murphy wrote this book. She spent 10 years putting it together. It's all of the World War II veterans from Grant County, and there are 78 of them. 26 of them are still living. And Mario has a few pieces of memorabilia there from his newspaper that did it articles for him. And so thank you both for coming, and thank you, for allowing us to have this interview and the StoryCorps and NPR and KRWG sponsoring this, and it's been a blessing.
I, too, want to say something. I want to say thank you, Mr. Miller, and thank you, Dave, for being here, and yourself, sir, that you have allowed us to come here and explain and tell about what we knew and what we went through. And I'm very proud to know Mr. Miller and Dave because they've been wonderful to me. I can't say anything. I'm very grateful myself. They have made me very happy to have known them.
Oh, and your great-great-grandfather was a POW in the War of 1812, and he was an Irishman.
My great-grandfather was Irish. He was born in Belfast, Ireland, and then he came to the United States at 16 years old, and he went into the Navy, too, and he was captured by the British, and they exchanged him, British prisoners, for him, and he was discharged, but he was an Indian fighter. Have a story about him. He done a lot for New Mexico. So I'm not going to say something else because I am.
Thank you both very much. Thank you.
That's it.